the front page is saying, is we wouldn't be able to see any of the documents for 5 years that went into the making of the agreement. So anything about what positions different countries brought to the table, anything about what different countries thought different provisions meant as far as the interpretation of the agreement, I call that really the anti-accountability clause, because suddenly full done, sprung upon us, would be this deregulatory agreement, and then all the fingerprints would basically be covered up for 5 years, as well as theoretically what it means. And then the interpretation of what it means would be left to a WTO tribunal to tell us to gut our laws.
Lori Wallach, a final comment on the relationship between TISA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, where TPP stands today.
So basically, it gives you a hint of what's going to be in those agreements and why we have to be against fast track.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, author of The Rise and Fall of Fast Track Trade Authority. That does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Is hiring a seasoned Linux systems administrator. Visit democracynow.org/jobs for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feld, Sarah Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcoff.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Please stay tuned for Positively Revolting. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by the KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Edgefield Concerts, presenting an evening with Joan Baez and the Indigo Girls next Thursday. Both Indigo Girls and Joan Baez are playing full sets. Also presenting Steve Winwood next Saturday. Tickets at edgefieldconcerts.com and Edgefield box office on the night of the show.
June 20th, 2014, Stories from the Streets is a groundbreaking celebration at Pioneer Square in Portland, Oregon, dedicated to exploring the life of hip-hop in the Pacific Northwest. Our mission is to raise awareness on the positive influences and lifelong benefits that hip-hop culture has had on our homeless youth and our community. All proceeds and donations from Stories from the Streets will directly benefit New Avenues for Youth nonprofit artist mentorship project. There will be graffiti, breakdancing, DJing, and rapping. Artists include Soul Miner, The Resistance, Black Butterfly, Ancient Soul, Mike Crenshaw, Lucky I Am of Living Legends, and DJ Andy Sparks. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. June 20th from 12 to 9 p.m. in Pioneer Square in downtown Portland.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor and broadcast live from the 2014 Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival. The 27th annual festival will take place July 3rd through the 6th, 2014, at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. It will feature Greg Allman, Los Lobos, Lee Fields, and The Expressions among the 100-plus acts that will perform over the four-day festival. The 27th annual Waterfront Blues Festival will benefit the Oregon Food Bank. More information on artists, tickets, and the KBOO broadcast of the festival can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Okay, hey,
If you're just tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is actually talk radio. Positively Revolting is the name of the show. My name's Joe Uris. I'm going to sit in through August while our wonderful hosts are on vacation. So this is an opportunity for me to get a little more exercise, a little more work to help KBOO. And it's an opportunity for you to talk with a different person, perhaps. The show is I think very fun, and I'm hopped to do it, and I hope you're going to enjoy it. And I want to talk about what I'm going to talk about. Isn't that a kind of a redundancy? You bet. First of all, oil trains. There's going to be oil trains, and there's going to be coal trains, and there's going to be a corrupt bargain. Yeah, actually, really, truly, a corrupt bargain. Here's what's happening. If you follow the oil train issue and the coal train issue, particularly the oil train issue, you know that up and down the Columbia, there are plans for oil and, in some cases, coal terminals. This is taking the Bakken oil. This is taking the highly explosive oil from the Dakotas and elsewhere and shipping it up to the up here to the Columbia River. And there it will be put on big tankers and sent to China and to India, where it'll be burned dirtily and produce more greenhouse gases. Exciting, huh? Well, in order to aid that process, there needs to be an improvement in the rail bed. Everybody sort of agrees to that. So what's going to happen is money from the state of Oregon is going to be used to improve the rail line. Yes, that's true. That's going to be so wonderful. And it's going to be $8.9 million to start with. And as you know, the trains actually run through various towns, and it's not a good situation. St. Helens and so on, the tracks are right next to the street. Now, do the rail beds need to be rebuilt? Does the rail lines need to be modernized? Yes, but this is why it's a corrupt bargain. In exchange for doing that, or in the course of doing that, there will be the possibility of increasing the number of oil trains. At the present time, from 24 monthly trains, and remember, each of these is, you know, like a mile long, and each of them contains these cars that if they fall over or they get bumped hard or whatever, can very well burst into flame, and the kind of oil they carry is highly flammable. So, you know, you could get another flaming town like the one in Quebec. Well, isn't that exciting? So they're going to increase the number of trains from 24 a month, which is what you get now, to 38. And that, of course, means that more than one a day of these very long, mile-long trains will be passing through these smaller towns, St. Helens and so on the way to the ports, which will then transship this oil, leaking, no doubt, a large amount of fumes, and send it to Asia. As I say, it'll be burned and turned into greenhouse gases and come back here and get us. This is classic chicken approach to the process of dealing with energy issues. The argument being kind of, well, if it goes over there, it's not, you know, it's okay. And to understand what all that means in another kind of sense, I wanted to give you just a short review of who are the big polluters. In this context, Chevron is number one. ExxonMobil is number two. Saudi Aramco, that's Arab American Oil Company, number three. British Petroleum, which is originally a British company. Gazprom, which is the Russian company. Royal Dutch Shell, you know, that's Shell. And National Iranian Oil Company, and so on. I don't need to really give you the whole list, but these are the companies that are the chief creators of the greenhouse gases that we face today. These are the people who need to be put out of business. We need to reduce our oil consumption. We need to reduce our general petroleum consumption. We need to reduce our natural gas. We need to stop fracking. We need to stop transporting poisonous and flammable oil. All this really needs to happen. This is not an opinion. This is a fact. There is no question but that we need to stop this. But under our Democratic, that's a small D,
system of monopoly capital. Oh, what a contradiction that is. It's very unlikely to be controlled. Obama doesn't either have the will, or maybe he has the will, but he certainly doesn't have the power to get the job done. Meanwhile, Governor Kitzhaber, what's not to like, running for a fourth term, says he hates the oil trains, but he's going to take state monies, what, nearly $9 million, and rebuild oil line, rebuild rail lines so that the trains can go more efficiently and so their numbers can be increased by a significant amount. There will be more than one oil train per day under this new plan. Remember, these trains are a mile long. Oh, boy. And I have another thought for you that I think is kind of interesting. I got an email from a very good friend who runs a blog and said, he said, you know, every time there's an environmental issue, the environmental community, 350.org, whatever, put their energies into opposing the specific project. And that's good. And sometimes they're successful. More often than not, they're really not. But here's his thing. His thinking is the problem is not the environment. The problem, in fact, is monopoly capital. And the solution, therefore, is not simply to have a case-by-case fight over each environmental degradation. What ought to happen is, in fact, the companies that are responsible for this should be attacked on a highly political and abstract way. That is, this is a bad system that produces these bad results that is destroying our environment. Rather than simply arguing, oh, be nice, maybe we ought to be looking at the system. Maybe we ought to be challenging. Maybe we ought to be, in other words, radical, which means in mathematical terms, to go to the root. And I wonder what you think. I really am interested in whether people perceive problems as just kind of mistakes that happen in the course of expansion of capitalism and serving the people with product, or whether, in fact, it is systemic and serious and must be approached with a systemic and serious rebuild or reboot of the entire economic system. What's your opinion on this? Call us at 231-8187. That's 231-8187. Okay, and I think, I mean, when you look at the Koch brothers, when you look at all these outfits that are pouring money into the Republican Party and essentially tying up with a bad Congress any ability of this president, who is not the strongest dude in the bunch, to do anything about the environment, we really are in a crisis. We really are in a bad situation. And we've seen how oil and the oil profiteers have driven our foreign policy. Look at the disaster of Iraq, in which essentially Cheney and Bush and all those guys just lied and lied and lied about the danger of weapons of mass destruction. Then when we got in there, they tore the whole system down. And right now we're seeing a resurgence of kind of weird fundamentalist Sunni Muslim faith versus the weird fundamentalism. And I say weird because I would say the same thing about Christians or Jews or whomever. Weird fundamentalism of the Shia. And so who's our ally in all this? Well, ironically, it's going to be Iran. If you know the history of Iran and the United States, you can appreciate the irony of that. I'm interested in hearing your thinking on two things, therefore. I'm interested in hearing your thinking on the way in which the United States has presented itself to the world and to its citizens to involve us in the world's Middle East oil crisis. And by the way, a crisis that extends beyond that to Gazprom, which is the Russian outfit, in Ukraine, which ships all the natural gas, well, just about all the natural gas that Europe uses, and is now holding back on that. I'm interested in your thinking on that. What strategies, if any, do you have? What interests, if any, do you have? I think that this is a very fundamental, which is to say radical, question. What should be done about the oil industry, about the profit-making process, and about the way our foreign policy is so obviously driven, sheer insanity, driven for the production of fossil fuels, which in turn are driving our atmosphere into chaos and our world into terror? So, What do you say? You want to give me a call about that? 231-8187. This is KBOO. Have we got somebody? I can't hear you. Oh, it's new. Me. What? Thomas! Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how's all of that hope and change working out for you?
Well, I still have a hope.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Are you actually getting to the point of outrage by what the administration's doing?
Oh, I long...
Are you still just a little bit disappointed?
You're challenging my lack of cynicism or my lack of, or my overarching faith?
No, I was just thinking in terms of actual, of the commitment, the intellectual commitment, not necessarily of you personally, but anyone who supported this presidency.
Yeah, well,
intellectual integrity to actually use the same criteria, and not just ethical, but indeed just logical framework to analyze the very real connections of this administration, and in larger sense, the party from which this administration springs and its actual associations to these centers of power like the oil company.
No, I think you're raising a really important point, and I appreciate it. But it takes a little complexity of answer, so be patient. Okay, first of all, yes, the Democrats are the other side of the establishment coin of American politics. Both political parties represent, to differing degrees, to differing elements, the ruling class. And that's obviously true. The hope that came with Obama was that he had, we thought, a fresh approach. I think there was a lot of hope that was based on the idea of an African-American president and the use of se si puede, you know, we can as a theme.
Yeah, but those are slogans.
Yeah. No, I agree. Those are slogans, and they turned out to be pretty empty. Now, in view of who the choices are in elections, it's really hard not to support the lesser of the two evils. Now, that's a strategy. It is not a solution to a problem.
Well, that's just defining. That's little more than defining the despair of a corrupt situation. That's not recognizing a solution. That's
I agree with you.
That's capitulating to an obvious problem. I mean, in and of itself, accepting it. And the thing is that, let me ask you this. I mean, when Barack Obama was courted by all of the, in the history's there, you can go back and look at it. If you analyze to the same degree, let's say, the Bush presidency, all the money was there. All the Wall Street money, the Bond Market Association, nuclear power, all of it was going into Obama's pocket. So all of these big, powerful institutions and these lobbies were banking on a candidate who was weak, that they could control, that was impressionable. And they were basing it on a knowledge of how the man actually voted and what his political tendencies were.
Yeah,
and
I don't just...
All of us educated lefties who are so pissed off about oil trains and the environment, okay, we listened to a bunch of sloganeering, and we thought we were electing a leader based on slogans, and the people who backed Obama were not hoping they'd elect a leader. They were hoping they would pay for a follower. Now, and I ask you, Martin Luther King said, he looked forward to a day when a man could be judged by the content of his character rather than by the color of his skin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, perversely, all of the ridiculous right-wing, sick, racist attacks against Obama, which are so unfounded, because a group of people that look at Obama's skin color cannot see anything right. I would posit to you the Democrats are guilty of approximately the opposite sin, and that is they cannot absolutely not look at Obama's content of Obama's character because they can't get beyond the color of his skin.
Yeah, no, I think...
So, you know, the thing with this oil and all of this, I mean, look at the offshore oil drilling that's going on, supported by Obama. Look at the massive fracking. Look at what happened back in Copenhagen with a complete capitulation of all the policies. You know, we've got to get rid of this idea. And another thing, too, how come Obama, he may not have the power, you said. Well, let me ask you this. How come presidents like Bush can get in there, whose platform has even less established public support, and they can push through giant wars in Iraq, push through these huge oil programs, et cetera, and somehow the Republicans have all this power, even though they're pushing against the popular public sentiment and polling, but the Democrats can't. Do you see what a lie? Do you see what a canard this is?
No, I do. I do. Hey, let me interrupt you for a second. Okay, let me interrupt you for a second, okay? I think your points are valid. I think your criticism is very significant and very worthy of comment on my part. There are two things that go on in American struggle. The first is this kind of political theater, which is the Democrats and the Republicans, which is, I would say, two sides of a bad coin, as you suggest. The second major reality is that there's a larger struggle that needs to be maintained. It's a struggle on the one hand for reform, and on the other hand for radical solutions.
Yeah, but they can win the reform game. The reform game is this goes right back into what you were saying. A good point you made at the beginning is the fact that we got to be really careful because reform acts like a sort of emotional bomb for us feel-good liberals. You know, we see a few little tiny temporary victories, and we feel like we've done something, and it lets us off the hook for really making a fundamental analysis of what's going on. And I think reform is a game that all the big corporations know how to win. They have the money to win reform. The best that reform is going to do on a superficial level, which is what most reform is going to delay the inevitable. So instead of having the bathtub drained in 10 minutes, the bathtub will be drained in a half hour. You know, did you read this report, this new report that's this Gillens and Page sociology and political science report that came out from Princeton and Northwestern that looks at the political structure in the U.S.? This hardly got any press. Their conclusion was of this big study is that the United States is more akin right now to an oligarchy than an actual democracy. If you
Who's
actually
that?
Look at what the public sentiment is versus how all the voting's gone and how all the policies have been supported by both parties. And I ask you this, how could this have ever happened? How could this have ever happened?
Well, wait. I'm going to offer. Okay, I agree with you in large part, and I'm going to set you free and respond. But I also think, and I want to acknowledge, that you're making a very good fundamental point about the nature of things. And the questions are both tactical and moral, I think.
Well, you know, yeah, and let's not just wiggle, you know, wiggling a little bit more vigorously inside of a straitjacket of conventional assumptions is not free intellectual freedom. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the call. I think it was a very good critique. Both of liberalism and of the so-called, I don't know, what do you want to call it, the soft left of America, the soft underbelly of kind of not really reforming things. And I think that one of the questions that everybody needs to ask, and it has to be a huge movement to make any difference at all, what are we doing? How well is it working? What is the reality of that lies behind the presentation of the so-called liberalism that dominates, to some extent, the Democratic Party? The reality is it's all very dreary, very disappointing, and really calls for a radical analysis, which is what our caller just was trying to do. And I appreciate that. And I don't have an answer. I think that when you're faced with the horrors of what the Bush administration was doing, and when they brought in a Sarah Palin as vice president and a crazy man like McCain as presidential candidate, there's not a lot of choice in the voting sphere. But there are two things one does politically. One votes, and probably more important, one organizes and struggles for fundamental social change. The two are not necessarily co-partners. And unfortunately, most people, if they vote at all, are essentially voting the lesser of the two evils. And I think the critique we just heard is really important. And I would like to continue that kind of a conversation. I don't have a solution, because I think people are totally brainwashed. People are totally fooled. We have spent years and years and years in mass media essentially telling lies to everybody. And most people have lives to live. They have the nut to make. They don't have time to make a serious and long-term analysis, at least not in huge numbers. And, you know, conditions for most people, while bad, are not bad enough for them to think in terms of revolution. I do truly believe that as long as we have what is called the Democratic Party and what is called the Republican Party, and they're both as dysfunctional and owned by the ruling class as they are, we really do live in an oligarchy. And we really do need to understand that. Then our strategy comes from that. Well, we'll vote for the lesser of the two horrors because the incompetence of the first horror was so great. But we don't consider that the end of our political lives. That's the beginning. That's the part called voting. That's a small part. That's an hour or so of our lives. The other, the struggle for improvements in all of the areas that need to be addressed, the justice, the social justice that's lacking, the environmental damage that's being done, all of that needs to be attended to by people mostly like the folks who listen to this show, probably, in large numbers of hours, in large numbers of dollars, in large numbers of efforts. All of that has to happen. And right now, most Americans are pretty much fooled by the so-called two-party system. And again, my position on that is there's a not so good... lousy, in fact, Democratic Party, which hasn't been a party of reform since President Johnson, who was a good reformer and blundered directly listening to the military into the stupidest war of the stupid wars until the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then there's the party that has gotten stranger and stranger and more aggressive and environmentally denying, historically denying, science denying, that characterizes the current Republican Party, which is very racist, very sexist, very much in reaction. So, two things one does. One votes for the lesser of the two evils, and one struggles, and this is where one's effort should go mostly, to build a movement that will challenge all of that. And eventually, if it's large enough, it can become a party to take over from the so-called liberalism of the Democratic Party. That's where I'm coming from. It's not a solution. I don't have a real answer because I'm not sure there is a real answer. I think it's a very sad situation. I want to hear from more of you, though. 231-8187. Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I'm very excited that you're going to be on Fridays.
Well, this is just through August, you know.
Yeah. Well, I share entirely your passion and your criticism, and I agree with everything that the last caller said.
Yeah, me too, ironically.
I wonder if you'd comment on the Polish proverb, you can make fish soup out of an aquarium, but you can't make an aquarium out of fish soup.
I don't know that proverb, but what does it mean?
Well, I think we've lost sight of long-term necessities and principles in an overly pragmatic and, you know, turbo individualistic culture where politics is reduced to sound bites and where trust just disappears completely. I mean, nothing could be more scandalous than the Vietnam War, where 3 million Vietnamese were killed.
Right.
The media, as you've described, is a look-away media, and it is caught with celebrity news. So our state is really very, very desperate. I spend all my time translating from German, and I'm very... very worried about the TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership.
Right, and there's a similar thing that's going to be the first of those in the Pacific.
Yes, the TPP.
Right.
But this agreement with Europe, which will create the largest free trade zone of 800 million people, will really allow fracking and allow banks to deregulate. In other words, any regulation on the banks, like the Dodd-Frank, would be in violation of the TTIP.
Yeah, that's my understanding of that project, too.
Minimum wages could also be criticized and sued and condemned as a reason for lost profits.
Yeah, in fact, I think the rules of both the Pacific and the Atlantic agreements would essentially allow companies to sue governments if the governments put in place environmental protections or whatever that cost them profits.
Yes. Only foreign investors can sue. States cannot sue investors.
Okay.
It's a three-person court, a corporate court. It's a private, it's a parallel system of justice. And it doesn't allow appeals.
Right.
Now, there's a Swedish energy company, Vattenfall, which is suing Germany for 3.7 billion euros for closing two of its nuclear reactors a little ahead of schedule. Because they claim they have some, you know, bilateral agreement or something. So they're claiming that closing the nuclear power plant cost them 3.7 billion euros.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an incredible travesty. You know, there's a company that's a Canadian company, Lone Pine, which is suing because of the fracking legislation in Quebec. So they're denied profits. Philip Morris is suing Uruguay and Australia because the warnings on the cigarette packages cost them profits.
You know, yeah, these are all real examples of what's really happening. When I do these shows, and I'm just being a little revealing of myself here, I guess, I am not a person who is able to avoid despair.
Right.
And I do think humanity is, under the leadership essentially of a profit-motivated society or societies, headed toward a huge disaster. I see the struggles, you know, the usual phrasing of the struggles in Marxist terms of the proletariat or the working classes versus the ruling classes as a subset of a larger oncoming wave of destruction and disorder, which will come out of the nature of what we're doing. That is, out of the nature of what we're doing will bring an environmental crisis of the most enormous and awful sort. So I would like to see an amelioration of that potential through reform. I don't have a lot of hope. I don't have a lot of faith. And I don't expect there to be radical revolution in the world of today. Certainly not in the United States, certainly not in China, unlikely in Russia, and not real likely in Europe or South America. So I'm trying to make the best.
Yes.
The best, use your soup analogy, the best soup I can out of the bad bones of a bad system. But I do like the call that the previous caller made and that you made, because I think both of you have a perfectly valid analysis.
This is really the time for alternative economics.
Yeah.
Unlike a chair, an idea can be shared by a whole people. And our economic thinking is so dreadful because it only benefits the top 1%.
Right.
You know, and Thomas Piketty's book is actually 950 pages.
Yeah, which people should read, by the way.
Yes. Disillusionment can be a new beginning.
If people don't simply sink into despair.
Yes.
You know, there's always, and this is the irony of it, pleasures. There's sex, drugs, and rock and roll for all ages in our society, and that set of things, the entertainments, the Game of Thrones, the whatever, can distract us effectively from what needs to be done and can provide us with hours and hours of solace and entertainment. And that's always there, and that's not an accident. That's part of the structure of modern monopoly capital.
So it's very exciting to be called to radical perspectives and radical changes in a world where the Oregon State University is paying the new basketball coach $800,000.
Wait a minute, is that true?
Yes.
Why?
So you see, well, universities.
you don't have to answer that. I'm just, you know,
universities somehow become profit centers, and churches become little social clubs. So we're living in a very strange world where it's easy to fall totally into despair. I think John Stewart is so important. Mm-hmm. And people can watch him on the computer, dailyshow.com. He has a whole week talking about Mesopotamia.
Yeah. I'm gonna go to somebody else.
Okay.
We're trying to keep the calls down to 3 minutes, and I think your points were very good, and the previous caller as well, if I may make a judgment. Why not? And I want to remind people that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. The number to call, talk on the show is 231-8187. My name's Joe Uris. I'm subbing for the regular Positively Revolting people who are going to be on vacation through the end of August. I won't be here permanently. For me, this is an opportunity to hone my skills better. As you may or may not know, on Tuesdays, Abe Proctor and I do a talk show not so different from this one. I also want to say that tonight, because of generous contribution of a couple in Portland, they and I and my partner are going to go to Higgins Restaurant. Greg Higgins has very generously offered meals for us. I, of course, cover the gratuity at his wonderful restaurant. We want to thank him. We want to thank the people who contributed $500 to keeping KBOO going. And I want to mention something really important. KBOO is the only truly progressive / radical analysis radio station in the region. And your support of it and your criticism of it are invaluable to keeping that process going. One of the things that I've learned, even as a child, is that you never know when the tipping point comes. You never know when people wise up. You never know what that can mean. So we got to keep on keeping on. We have to expect the worst and hope for the best. And that may sound corny, but that's the only choice we really have. Now, I got to tell you some stuff. Coming up on this morning on Boo at 8 o'clock, Veterans Voice. The guest is Lisa Lates, the author of Fighting for Peace, Veterans and Military Families in the Anti-Iraq War Movement. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, more analysis of what led up to the current fighting in Iraq. At 11 on the Radio Zine, we hear artist and blogger Danielle Kreisa. Her new book, Creative Block, Get Unstuck, Discover New Ideas, Advance and Project from 50 Successful Artists. Advice and Projects from 50 Successful Artists. And at 11:30, the Beehive Design Collective talks about the final image of their trilogy about globalization in the Americas. And again, this is what we do. We have the best music programming, really roots music and so on. But we also do tell you as much as we can. We make a radical analysis and we present the news in that context. And we're the only ones doing it. And you need to support us. And if you've made a contribution already, hey, thanks a lot. If you haven't, no time like the present. KBOO needs you and needs your support. Thank you. Now, the number to call, 231-8187. We're talking about the reality of the situation, particularly with as it relates to fuel. And as the example that I gave at the beginning is, Governor Kitzhaber, who's running for an unprecedented fourth term, is saying he doesn't like oil trains, he doesn't like coal trains, but he wants to spend money on doing something that needs to be done, ironically, but will just make there be more of those trains, which is to improve the rail lines that go along this side, the southern side of the Columbia River. I want to hear from you. Janie,
I'm
sorry.
Janie, darling.
Oh, I only hear what I hear, you know what I mean?
I know, I just haven't made enough presents yet. But anyway.
Go ahead.
So, I want to say a couple of things. The Greens are looking for someone to run for governor, and so anybody who's a Green in our listening area that's in Oregon, we would love to process your application for governor.
Well, that's cool. You know,
candidate yet, and we shouldn't. There should be someone who will stand up to both Kitzhaber and the Republican nominee, whoever that is.
Yeah, well, I believe it's this lady who does brain surgeries on children, and who is kind of a closeted hardcore Republican who seems to be following all the pattern of the National Republican right wing.
But, you know, Kitzhaber has let us down from what he used to be. I think he's got the same Koch brothers worm in his brain that Governor Jerry Brown down in California
has. Wait a minute, a Koch brothers worm?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's Star Trek kind of
yeah, I got you.
Science fiction thing. But anyway, you know, and he's let us down with the health care plan. He's let us down on GMOs, you know, and this whole oil train stuff, he's letting us down again. So I want to say that we would really love to have you get in touch with the FCC. We're going to have another nominating convention in August sometime. And we would really love to have a governor candidate, and we would also love to have a senator candidate.
Well, I think that...
That said, I've still got one other thing, a local thing that
okay.
I would like to say.
Go for it.
And we are running a Benton County Community Rights campaign for Food Freedom Initiative. It's an anti-GMO thing, and it's really based on the Oregon State Constitution, which says the people have the power. And we need more signature gatherers, and we need to keep getting more signatures. So tonight in Corvallis at the South Co-op Meeting Room from 5:30, at 6, and at 6:30, please come and join us to get your petitions, to get out there, and to learn how to gather signatures correctly so we get this on the ballot. We got it past all the legal challenges to put it on the ballot. So let's get it on the ballot and vote for it. We've got two GMO initiatives we've got one statewide and we've got one here, and those both need to go.
Well, I agree with you, and I really support that. I'm sorry that we can't do more. We have so much that is on our plate as a station.
I know, and we all do, and it's time for those of us who have been doing it for a long time, it's the time for the rest of you to get up and participate in your democracy.
I absolutely agree with you.
Anyway, and I will give my number.
Okay, are you willing to give it on the air?
Oh, of course, I'm a public figure, for God's sake.
Okay, go ahead.
It's 541-829-9788. I'm on the State Coordinating Committee. My name is Yaney McIver.
Well, you and I actually have met, you know.
Oh, yes, we have.
Yeah.
And anyway, I did want to say one more thing. I think the Democrats have always been running scared since McCarthyism, and they have not been able to stand up and be the way they should because of all the red baiting, and they've always been afraid of it.
Well, I think you're right. I think it's not just red baiting, though.
And they can't get it. They can't get rid of it. And they started taking Koch brothers' money first. So anyway, back in I think 1988.
Well, I don't know the date, but I do know they take money from bad folks. I also know that the great disaster of the Democratic Party. There are several. One was the retreat from progressive politics, beginning with the nomination of Harry Truman for their vice president, who ended up actually being president and giving us the Korean War. I know that is certainly true. And I know that the real attempt to build civil rights and civil justice, that let's be clear here, that Lyndon Baines Johnson had the power and the effort and some degree of success in doing, really got canceled out, in my mind, by his wholesale support for and belief in a military solution in Southeast Asia.
Anyway, please come and join us at the South Co-op Meeting Room today, 5:30, 6 o'clock, 6:30. If you want to run for governor, give me a call. And
you bring me $1 million, I'll run for governor.
How much do you need?
Oh, I said off the top of my head $1 million, but I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I don't like being a real public figure myself.
You're really shy on the radio.
Well, it's just the radio, though. When I pick my nose and I know 1,000 people are seeing it, I feel awful.
Anyway, good to talk to you, Joe.
Hey, thanks a lot. And I hope people will show up at the South Meeting Hall?
It's the South Co-op Meeting Room.
Where is that specifically?
It's on 3rd Street in Corvallis.
Okay.
Everybody, it's at the South Store.
Well, I hope people will do that. I really believe that the petition drives that you're supporting are very important. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Joe.
Take care. 231-8187 is the number to call. Talk on the air. And if you disagree, you're more than welcome as well. I think we have a Sean. Hello? Hi. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Go ahead.
The beauty of radio is if you're picking your nose now, at least we can't see it.
Yeah, or some other spot we don't want to talk about. Anyway, yes.
Anyway, so to start off, a quote from Van Jones. We all know who Van Jones is.
Hopefully. Right.
He said, "Our demands have been too small to win, so our dreams must be bigger. When we shrink our demands to what we think is politically achievable, it actually undermines our ability to succeed."
You know, that may be a very true and wise insight. I know that for me, I talk about this fighting on two levels thing, using the Democratic Party, blah, blah, blah. Is it possible to have third parties, blah, blah, blah? What are we going to do in a more radical sense? Shouldn't we be in the streets? And so on. And look at the examples that we saw, you know, when people labeled the 1%, and look at Piketty's book and so on. We know we're right. And we know that the struggles we're engaged in will save humanity if only we can bring about the changes we're fighting for. What we don't know, and this is, I mentioned this earlier, but it's really important, is where the tipping point is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've reached the tipping point.
No, I don't mean the tipping point for the climate or something. I mean the tipping point.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Okay, tipping point for radical action.
Just overall politically. And I think, first of all, it's kind of like in the beginning, the very first caller. Yes, I agree. But I think there's far too much emphasis, and I think it's easy for us to stay focused on what Obama has or hasn't done, or mm-hmm. what the United States has become, or what it is, and so forth. Because I think that ultimately what was just said a moment ago by the second caller,
mm-hmm.
and that the whole idea of what all these trade agreements are about, what I believe that even 9/11 was about, and I don't agree with you on your ultimate belief about 9/11. I think it's playing into the ignorance around it.
Okay, well, anyway.
Because, no, I just want to say is that, that the agreements state that it allows companies to sue governments.
Right.
And the trade agreements are all held in secret, and just what was said on Democracy Now! Is the outrageousness of the new TSA is that they can enact it, and then nobody can know who was involved or what was said for 5 years after the fact, and by that time, of course, tons of damage has been done.
No, you're right. That is
right.
A terrible thing.
So the whole point is, that very thing is if it's all about companies, multinationals, being able to sue governments,
mm-hmm.
basically draining their treasuries, stealing the people's money, because that's who's really supposedly is the government, is that shows what this is really about. It's not about arguing individual governments and so forth. It's about the few individuals who are running and creating all these agreements and taking over these things and holding all the countries hostage to what they want. I think a great example is the latest National Geographic has a great article of what's happening in Africa and basically going in and stealing all the resources and land to suck up everything they have. I mean, it's playing into this thing. So I just, you know, it's like, I think there's just way too much emphasis a lot of times on, you know, staying too focused in the wrong direction.
Mm.
And not really who is is really running these things?
Well, I think that's the argument my friend made in his blog. I think he's saying, look, it's great to fight the coal trains. It's great to fight the oil trains. It's great to fight the fracking and so on. But the reality is this is about a small number of extremely powerful individuals and corporations exactly. who are destroying the world.
Exactly. Like for what instance, what's happening right now in Iraq? All of a sudden, these so-called ISIS shows up out of nowhere. These things take time to plan. They take a tremendous amount of money. It's like I call in and talk to Per about it. You know, you don't all of a sudden have a group of so-called fanatics or whatever you want to call them mm-hmm. showing up with 500 brand-new Toyotas with machine guns on the back, which is a good chunk of money, that has to do with the global arms trade, that has to do with the oil, that has to do with Paul Bremer and the corporatization of taking the resources in Iraq, and the timing of it that they're showing up in northern Iraq, which is where the resources are, at the same time that the election about that Maliki, who is a U.S. puppet, is out, and all of a sudden, who shows up out of the rotten woodwork after not hearing about him for 10 years? Ahmed Chalabi is now supposed to take over from Maliki.
Well, and in fact, the survival...
Who's a CIA pawn.
Right, and the survival of the Ba'athist Party, which was Saddam Hussein's organization, that right. held it all together in Iraq.
Yeah.
No, I think this is really a very valid thing. And you know what else we're seeing? We're seeing the regular networks of television and other media giving credibility to idiots and evildoers like Cheney, like Dick Cheney.
Right.
It's incredible. What these are Wolfowitz, these guys who've totally screwed us over, and now they suddenly appear and yep. they suddenly act like experts.
Right, and that's the whole idea is we'll keep it quiet, but it's all the planning is going on underneath, and then we'll bring it out at the right time. And I think it just, to me, again, it represents, I really do go back to Naomi Klein's book about shock. I think it was one of the
Shock
most,
Doctrine?
Shock Doctrine. It,
yeah.
It really, she articulated exactly what we are seeing magnified now, and that was the whole idea around, like, at the very end of Democracy Now! Was the gal talking about these mm-hmm. trade agreements mm-hmm. and what happened after 9/11 in terms of the financial, the deregulations, the impact. And the whole premise of her book was about the word shock is to go in, and in different ways, it was a metaphor for how they go in.
Mm-hmm.
They shock the population, no matter where it is. And while they are discombobulated by the shock, that is when they go in and start taking.
Well, I agree with that. And I think that one of the things that we need to understand about the Middle East wars, plural, is that really they were created, I think, in large part because it's a useful bit of shock that allows the suspension of civil liberties and so on. And
exactly.
I understand why you say that 9/11 was a put-up job, because it fits so nicely that particular narrative. Whether we agree or not about what exactly happened on that date, I think we all can agree that it served that particular purpose.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's all planned because of everything fell into place for them right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, you can call it, oh my God, it was some huge irony that just happened and gave them that. But it's like the thing, you know, it's like the U.S. Patriot Act. You know, that came in right afterwards.
Right.
You know, the Congress, they didn't even allow them time to read it because the damn thing was over 1,000 pages long, right?
Yeah.
So they forced them to read it. Well, they made it sound like all of a sudden this 1,000-plus page document just showed up in the last week.
Right.
Things like that take time, no matter how many lawyers have to articulate
it. 1,000 lawyers writing 1,000 pages.
Right. And so somebody must have known that was coming in order to take the time to write such a huge law.
Before I go there, I'm not disagreeing with you, but before I go there, I want to let you go because I think other people are waiting in line.
And I understand. It's a hot issue. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for the call. By the way, I want to congratulate folks. I think the arguments I'm hearing, apart from the fact that more or less I agree with them, I think the arguments I'm hearing look toward a radical understanding. And I think if you're listening to us, you need to heed that, because reformism, even the best environmental reformism, while a good thing is not good enough an analysis to explain and deal with what's going on in the world right now, where we're getting more and more money, more and more power, more and more war equipment in the hands of smaller and smaller numbers of people who are all about themselves and not at all about humanity. And I want to hear from another caller. 231-8187. Sean.
Hang up and try your call again.
Oh, Sean has got impatient. See? That's why I try to keep him three-minute calls so everybody can get a chance. Is there somebody else there? 231. 231-8187. Lynn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So are you having, enjoying your analysis this morning?
Thank you.
But I just wonder... I think you made the case that something different needs to happen, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one aspect you didn't mention was the environmental groups, and
I did, but go ahead.
Well, I didn't hear it. I haven't been an employee and a supporter of several over the years. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty embarrassed about that at this point. Basically about their lack of unity and their continuing. I think it's probably just a human thing, but everybody wants to do their own little thing. For example, I've been to events about both the coal trains and the oil trains. Neither one gets mentioned at the other when the other one's doing anything. I mean, it's like it's two separate things.
I think that's a very good point. I think we should always, whatever the issue and the focus of that issue, we should always tie it to all the larger questions.
But I have another question. Do you think if we're trying to get something new done that we should still keep hearing the same voices?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think that young people are coming up, learning the messages, learning the truth, and are starting to appear. When I went down to see the people in the park, you know, during the Occupy movement, I heard a lot of new voices, a lot of young people. All of whom were very articulate, or most of whom were very articulate, and most of whom had really good analysis. I think that it is inevitable that younger people will begin to pick up the torch and struggle. But I think also we, some of us older folks, some of us in the middle years, some of us young, we all need to understand that it's one big fight, that we're all in it together, that where we might have disagreements on doctrine or on tactics, really, we're all in it together. And in fact, the oncoming dreadful future needs to be fought at every level by all of us.
Well, I think that's true, but I can't think of a revolution that was ever sparked by retirees.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that.
And as you say, you went down, and good for you. I think you and many people from KBOO did do a great job during Occupy.
Yeah, actually, I broadcast down there.
May I point out, with all due respect, mm-hmm. we're not hearing any of them five mornings a week, or we're not hearing any of them for an hour every week at this time.
Okay.
Talk radio.
I think that's a good criticism. I don't know what to do about it. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Huh. Okay. Carrie? Harry! Oh, Harry got impatient. You know, folks, you have to hang in. Hey, are you back?
Yes, this is Harry.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have a solution to the North Dakota oil issue.
Okay.
Have Congress pass a law so that the oil has to be used domestically, used in our refineries and used in our gas tanks, and bring down the oil prices. Have you noticed that the price of gas has gone up?
Oh yeah.
And the price of oil.
Oh yeah.
So, but we're shipping this oil overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not cost effective.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I think it's a good idea. It's a small piece of a larger puzzle, but I think you're right. I think if we had a requirement that that natural resources produced in the United States had to be used in the United States, it would change a lot and might be worthwhile. You know, we're running out of time, so I need to...
Okay, thank you.
To let you go. Yeah, I can't see... I think we're out of time. Is that true? We have 2 minutes. If there's one caller who can do a 2-minute call, do it. One, two, three, boom. No, I get to say the final word. Ha, ha, ha. I will be here through August on Fridays taking the place. Well, nobody can take the place, but sitting in for the people who do the show that's normally here at this time and Positively Revolting. And then I'll be gone. I do a show with Abe Proctor on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock as well. And I really do want to hear from you. I want to hear your criticisms. I want to hear your suggestions. And I want to hear you on the air. And I'll say something else because it's important. This spot tends, whenever I do it, to be dominated by male voices. That's not wrong. It's not bad. But it would be great to hear more women. And that's just my bias, I guess. So I'll be here next week, and I'll be here Tuesday, and I really thank you. I really thank you for the opportunity, and I hope the show serves your interests, and I'm really open to your suggestions. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is keep it amusing and informative and also a little bit scary, because you know what? It's more than a little bit scary. And if you care about yourselves, if you care about your children, if you care about the children's children, you need to be involved in all of these struggles, because it's going to get you if you don't fight it, and it may get you even if you do. So stay tuned to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. Reality used to be a friend of mine. Reality used to be a friend of mine. Reality used to be a friend of mine. Please don't ask because I don't know why, but reality used to be a friend of mine. I used to be friends with reality. She used to be a pal real close to me, but she tried to hide from me what was in store. Tried to house me, but a house has doors. I was insane and the picture was crazy, so the relevance here seems to be a bit hazy, but I try to explain this in the simplest terms.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Please stay tuned for Veterans Voice.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual What the Festival, June 20th through 23rd in Duver, Oregon. What the Festival is an annual electronics festival which this year features the Glitch Mob, Washed Out, Nightmares on Wax, and more. There will also be a hookah lounge, relaxation huts, and the largest disco ball on the West Coast. Again, that's What the Festival, June 20th through 23rd at the Wolf Run Ranch in Duver, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO for the 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. KBOO will again broadcast the entire festival from noon to 10 p.m., July 3rd through the 6th. The broadcast will also be carried by various stations of Oregon Community Media for statewide coverage of this Oregon Food Bank Benefit Festival. Again, July 3rd through the 6th, noon to 10 p.m. each day here on your community radio station.